Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done.
Please enjoy the audio from this live stream recorded on April 4th. Good morning, and thank you everyone for joining us, or good afternoon, depending on your time zone. I am Robert Schoenberger, Editor-in-Chief of Industry Week, and welcome to Production Pulse, our bi-weekly live stream where we talk about issues important to the manufacturing world. And this week, we are talking about one of the biggest news stories of the year already, which is the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, which last week was hit by a container vessel and collapsed almost immediately. It was a huge tragedy, and we would be remiss not to begin with a comment that the six people who died on that bridge, where we talk a lot about supply chain and other technical issues, we need to keep foremost in our minds that this was a fatal accident, and the impact of which we're still waiting to fully understand as an industry. Joining me today to discuss this topic are several editors from Endeavor Business Media. I'm going to start just kind of going around the table. We have Josh Fisher, who is the editor-in-chief of Fleet Owner Magazine, who's done some really great work over the past week looking at how this is snarling the over-the-road shipping issues. We have Rod Sutton with Construction Equipment Magazine, and the construction world is definitely being impacted by these changes. We have Anna Smith from Industry Week. Anna is our news editor, and she is also covers supply chain issues for us and has been doing some fantastic work here. We have Nicole Stempak from EHS Today, which is our environmental health and safety magazine. She's managing editor over there and has been keeping an eye on several of those issues. And we are running into some technical problems, but hopefully we will get Ryan Curtis back on shortly. Ryan is the digital editor for Roads and Bridges. And as you might imagine, Roads and Bridges has been doing lots and lots of work on this major bridge collapse in one of the largest cities in the U.S. So Nicole, if we could start with you, I just want to talk about the safety issue, because as I mentioned, you know, this was a fatal accident. We had six people on that bridge die, and they were all on road crews. And some of the commentary I've seen and some of the questions I've heard over the past few days have been wondering, why were we not able to get in touch with those people? We were able to shut down the bridge. We were able to do all these other things. What was it about getting people in the field that we weren't able to accomplish that as quickly as we were able to accomplish everything else? So if you could just talk a little bit about the difficulty in reaching road crews and remote field workers at times like this. Yeah, is that a challenge for the industry in general when we're talking industrial safety?
It always is. You know, having workers on a site that, you know, in construction can be a few feet wide and several miles long, out in environmental conditions, dispersed, people who don't always speak the same languages. You know, the more you do it like this one, the more you see the challenges for any given day, let alone a tragedy like this one.
One of the reports, one of the more tragic ones, is that one of the state troopers, and we actually, there are some audio of this out there, recognized that the bridge was going to get hit and saw that there was a crew out there, wanted to dash out there in his cruiser and pick up those workers and drive them off the bridge. And had he done so, there's no question he would have died as well, because there was no time. By the time they realized this and tried to get someone out there, there was less than 30 seconds before the bridge was going to be hit. And it's that stretch was well over a mile long. It doesn't matter how good of a driver you are, you can't overcome that level of distance, no matter how aggressive you are going to be driving.
Right. They just had very few seconds to react to this situation.
So moving on, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the business impact of this. And one of the big questions we have is on supply chain. Anna, you've written a lot about the fact that global shipping is a little snarled right now between problems with the low water in the Panama Canal and the challenges getting shipments through the Red Sea with the attacks on shipping there. Where does this fit in to all that? Now we have yet another challenge facing the shipping industry.
So it's kind of fitting into this overall narrative I'm seeing now that kind of a regular stable supply chain is something that doesn't really exist anymore. Specifically for Baltimore, it's one of the 10 largest ports in the US in terms of dollar value of the cargo. Obviously everyone's heard it's going to have an impact mostly on the auto industry. It's the number one port in the US for automobile imports and exports. Also on the vehicle side, they handle a lot of farm and construction machinery, equipment. And then sort of on a different side where it might cause some ripple effects, it handles things from the food industry, sugar and different types of things that can have a ripple effect upstream. And then also aluminum and other types of metals that go through there are going to have another ripple effect for, you know, metals manufacturing or anything from home building. Also on the home building side, there are different, plaster, plywood, things like that that are going to disrupt any kind of construction. And like I was saying earlier with the metals, you know, sub-assemblies, any kind of major manufacturing that is large scale that uses these metals. So those are mostly home construction and building construction that's going to have a similar constraint to the auto industry that might not be talked about as much. One thing I have seen conversations about is sort of the spillover that's going to happen in the nearby East Coast ports. There's concerns about overflow or too much constraint trying to find alternate ports. What I have found though is they're mostly diverting to the three ports they're diverting to the most is Norfolk, New York, and Wilmington. And those ports actually will be able to sort of lessen the impact. They have a much larger volume that can handle. So overall, what I'm seeing from the experts is they actually expect the impact on the supply chain to be pretty minimal long term. And any short term impacts are going to have to do with mostly the logistics on particularly in Baltimore, but also on the East Coast and any sort of upstream things in the Midwest mostly. And like I said, what I have been kind of, the lesson kind of to be learned from this isn't from the supply chain I've seen many people discuss is the importance of having, you know, redundancies, whether that's safety or in your supply chain and being prepared because like I said, there's never going to go back, it seems, to like a new normal where it's sort of a new normal now where there's never going to be a time when everything's just running smoothly like before these impacts we've been seeing maybe in the past like 5 years or so.
Thank you. That's great stuff. And Rod, I'm going to probably want to follow up with you on that, talk about the bringing construction equipment in. But first, I wanted to talk to you, Josh, about this question of ignoring the port itself. This is a major bridge. This is a major corridor across one of the busiest sections in the country. How are shippers, how are trucking companies dealing with this challenge?
No, it really is. It typically handled nearly 5,000 trucks a day. And millions of vehicles a year travel that span over the river. It's part of the Baltimore Beltway. And what's happened now is there are three other ways to get across the harbor, but two of them are tunnels. And there is another bridge. The tunnels all limit the size of the trucks that can travel through them, and particularly any carrying any sort of hazardous material, such as petroleum or gases, cannot travel through the bridge. So we spoke Jeremy Wolf, who's part of Fleet Owner, spoke to the head of the Maryland Motor Carriers Association, who noted one of his members said it added about another hour to their commute. It's a 30-mile detour, basically, if you don't go through the tunnels. But you also got to think of all the other cars and regular travelers who also are detouring around that span that no longer exists. So that's added a lot more time. And it's really become a big local trucking problem in Maryland and around Baltimore. In speaking to some other folks within the industry, we have seen spot rates go up. Those are the rates that truckers can bid on individually, and fleets can bid on individually to carry a load. So we've seen a big spike in spot rates out of Baltimore, but a lot of analysts feel like it will not have, like, kind of to echo what Anna was talking about, it won't have the same sort of widespread supply chain problems that we certainly saw out of the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles during the COVID days. But it's a big headache for people in this area, in the Baltimore area, and could affect a lot of jobs too around the port, because a lot of the drivers rely on carrying loads out of the port of Baltimore, along with there's a lot of workers in that area right now.
Now, I've been through those tunnels, and what always struck me was the $6 fee that you get when you go through that Baltimore tunnel, and it's usually connecting to another toll road, so that's a very expensive corridor, and that's for consumer drivers. I imagine the truckers pay a much higher fee if they're allowed to use that that tunnel at all.
The ones that are small enough do, and it's generally a per axle fee. I'm not positive on that. I've been through it too. I live about 50 miles or so from the bridge, I think some people listening who are familiar with the area, Robert, might think that $6 is one of the cheaper tolls that you pay along the I-95 corridor.
All right. Moving over to you, Rod, Anna talked a little bit about the challenge. Yeah, this is a major vehicles port. It is the number one for autos, but it's not all that far behind for things like tractors and other. It's a roll-on, roll-off port. It has a huge staging yard for anything that can be brought in or off a ship on its own power. Can you talk about the sort of impact that's having?
Correct. It's the top U.S. port, obviously. Or actually for roll-on, roll-off, and for construction equipment, that's how they move it. But it's also the third in the nation for importing and exporting equipment, with five times as much import traffic coming in as exports. So the thing to remember with construction equipment is it's a truly global manufacturing community. So even the U.S. manufacturers are importing some specific types of machines from overseas. The port leads the nation in backhoes and excavators, which you see all over the place, not only on roads, but in sewer construction, home building, that sort of thing. So it is a point of import. And in addition to whole goods, what we're hearing from our manufacturer is repair parts also flow in to this port. So it's a choke point for all sorts of construction equipment and parts. The concern for fleet managers is these orders are placed weeks, months in advance. So they're expecting the equipment to arrive when a project starts. That may not be happening now. It depends specifically on the kind of machine they've ordered, but they should expect delays in the delivery, and they're going to see delays on repair parts as well. Now, as mentioned, the other ports are going to pick up on this. So we're not seeing immediate delays, but what Josh mentioned and what Anna mentioned is those ports are now going to have to physically get the equipment back up to Baltimore. There's a manufacturer that was quoted in the Wall Street Journal today that said they import the machines disassembled. They assemble them in Baltimore. So they're going to have to truck them from Virginia to Baltimore. So all told, these transportation costs are going to add to the the cost of equipment. And some are saying that we're going to see some short-term price increases to go along with some of the short-term delays.
Yeah, again, the initial report, when I remember reading this, this is like the 19th largest port in the country. So how serious can that be when there are 18 larger ones, where it really is dwarfed by like Long Beach or New York or some of these others? But it's not the how big, it's what it's bringing in and how easy that is to replace. We have these complex supply chains.
The other thing, Robert, to know with construction equipment is the big manufacturers are in the Midwest. So this is actually the closest port to Illinois, Wisconsin. And Long Beach isn't necessarily an option.
So I guess, could this affect when we're talking about companies like Deere or CAT? I mean, you reached out to pretty much all the major manufacturers and got some really good comments in a story that ran today. Could this affect their exports to Europe, to Africa, to the Middle East?
Yes. Neither one of those companies responded, but Deere is a huge ag manufacturer as well as construction equipment, and this is their port. So I imagine that in addition to the imports, they're going to have some export problems as well. I just didn't get anybody to confirm that for me.
Sure. All right, let's move on a little bit. Ryan, I mean, roads and bridges, you guys have just done fantastic work all past week on this. It's in your name. So tell us a little bit about this bridge. I mean, one of the first questions that came up is how can a bridge collapse so quickly? Why was it built this way? What's the history behind all that?
Sure. Yeah. So it was built in 1977. That's when they finished construction on it. And I think in today's dollars, it's a little above $300 million. The cargo ship hit a support pylon, which pretty much holds up the span of the bridge. It's been hit before. So in 1980, a ship did hit Baltimore Bridge. There are these barriers, kind of barricades around these support beams. They're called dolphins. And that's obviously to lessen the impact if something hits those support pylons. It was shown that they haven't been updated in years, which if you look at ships back then compared to now, the cargo ships of today, especially the one that hit it, 10 times bigger than what they were shipping in, 1977, 1980. It was bound to come down with just the force of that ship hitting that support pylon.
And there was another bridge that was built in the same time period. I think it was in Tampa that had a similar design that was brought down in a similar way, and that led to changes in the building codes. Right, you can't build a bridge like this anymore.
I believe that was the Skyway Bridge in Tampa. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I think that just, it's kind of a bigger issue in terms of our infrastructure. I don't know if you're up to date with it, but like the infrastructure report card put out every few years, our bridges and our roads are in decline. Like, it's awful. I think our rating for bridges is like a C, which I don't know. I don't feel safe driving on that, I really think it's a bigger issue with our infrastructure. That's kind of why the IIJA, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, is such an important thing. We need to invest more money into our infrastructure. It's stuff we use every day. It's not built for one person, it's built for everybody. We just have declining infrastructure in general.
When it comes to rebuilding something of this scale, I mean, again, we have this Infrastructure and Jobs Act that's already leading to big projects all over the country. We have a commercial building boom going on. How hard is it going to be to find people to do this, and how big of a job is this to rebuild a bridge in the Baltimore over the river?
Yeah, I mean, the original built in 5 years. Now I think a lot more work is put into design, stuff like that. experts are saying it's going to take years. I don't think it'll be hard to find a company who will want to jump at this project. I do think it is going to take a strain on, you know, obviously travel and just everything we've kind of been talking about, you know, imports, exports, commercial vehicles traveling, stuff like that. I'm going to say it'll probably take about 5 years to build, if I had to guess, going by what experts are saying and everything, but it could take longer depending on when they clean it. They clean the harbor out, you know, and get everything situated.
And kind of go back over to you, Rod, on that side. Again, there are so many projects going on. Is this an opportunity on the commercial vehicle side, or is this just another challenge to continue feeding this demand nationwide for these big projects?
I think this is just going to be another project in the pipeline. As Ryan said, this isn't something you're going to start building tomorrow. And if there's any discussion about bridge design, then that's going to take time too. The contractors out there, they have a pipeline. I'm not seeing, from what I'm trying to remember the last report I read from AGC, the Contractors Association, the pipeline is, it can handle this. So once the bridge is designed, once it's set up, once they get the funding arranged, I don't think there'll be any problem getting people to put the project together. Obviously, with every project, you've got, you know, the labor issues, but from an equipment standpoint, I don't think it's going to be an issue.
Going back to you, Nicole, I mean, you see, we lost your signal for a little bit, but you're back now, so that's great. Ryan brought up the whole idea of safety, and you guys at EHS today, you looked a little bit about at bridge safety. What's going on throughout the rest of the country in terms of how safe are we driving across some of these spans?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was on vacation last week, and after I learned about the bridge collapse after driving 1,000+ miles to Texas, and on our way down, I was frequently commenting about seeing so many construction projects, you know, being expanded, repaired, built, and, you know, hit a bunch of traffic at 10 p.m. to midnight in Kentucky. But the reality is that there's so many roads and bridges that we, you know, kind of take for granted in America. So that poses challenges, right? Because not every construction company can handle these, right? And the bidding process and having the safety reinforcements. One thing I had seen about this bridge collapse is questions about, you know, the communications and radio communications, and whether or not they had a boat in the water to warn crews. And so, you know, as everyone's been saying, these projects take a ton of time, and, you know, from the design, but also building safety into that is a huge, you know, is a huge component to it, and making sure that there's adequate training and that everyone has clear comprehension of what's happening. But yeah, I mean, it definitely makes you wonder, right? Like I was driving, when we were driving back on the bridge that crosses the Mississippi from Arkansas, and I thought, I wonder how safe this is. And after I got home, I'm glad I didn't see it at the time, but I learned that the bridge had had to be stopped, like traffic halted, kind of a 911 call, because, you know, there was a structural integrity concern that resulted in the bridge being shut down for a few months. So, you know, we use them every day and we take them for granted every day, but there's so much that goes into these roads and bridges that we really need to be more conscientious of what's happening in the bigger picture.
Well, thank you all for joining me today for this conversation. I mean, it's still an ongoing story. We'll be covering it across several brands here at Endeavor Business Media. But again, I'd like to thank Ryan Curtis for joining us from Roads and Bridges, Nicole Stempak from EHS Today, Josh Fisher from Fleet Owner, Rod Sutton from Construction Equipment. I'm going to get that right one of these days. And Anna Smith here at Industry Week. And just again, a reminder, this was a tragedy. 6 people lost their lives when that bridge collapsed. And we'd also be remiss not to mention the fantastic work done by first responders, the fact that this could have been so much worse had the pilot not called in the emergency situation and had the police not shut down the bridge on both sides. There could have been far more vehicles on there, and this could have been an even larger tragedy. So as bad as this was, it could have been so much worse. And we'll continue following this for the next several months at least, I'm sure, as we see this road being rebuilt, this bridge being rebuilt, and trade moving around the East Coast to make room for the capacity that was lost here. Thank you, everyone. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.